Oh, it's nice to be watching a movie with a budget again.
Right?
Well, there's definitely a costume budget.
Man,
backgrounds or whatever, yeah.
there are so many studs in this movie.
Different,
Not just the
different,
hosts.
different shapes, sizes.
Like, I feel like the costume designer looked at a piece of fabric and said, that's a little too smooth for my liking. Let's put some studs on there.
Not just that, there's a lot of headgear. Headgear is very, very prominent in these cuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, what is it, the Hyborian Age? Is that what it calls it?
What a wonderful age.
I felt like that was the last movie. There's a lot of high boring in there.
Is that the difference in high fantasy? It's high boring.
Yeah.
Well, we're now about to talk about the Italian injected insanity of Dino De Laurentiis.
Yes, we
Ah,
are.
yes.
Are we
Oh, I haven't.
doing this out of order by talking about Red Sonja before doing the two Conan movies?
Yes. Yeah. We're
Oh,
doing it out of order because Red Sonja puts Arnold Schwarzenegger's name first. Cue the music.
Here we are.
Everyone, God damn it, don't talk over me.
I'm sorry, am I in the wrong movie? Oh, is this your movie? Okay, back off.
Welcome, everyone. I am telling you the story of Red Sonja because I, Arnold Schwarzenegger, am the only one who could do that. Welcome, everyone, broads and bastards, to Red Sonja, a movie I've never seen. I'm super excited. The 1985 Red Sonja movie by the Sword Boys. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Rick.
And I'm Robin. And I might have seen this, but I don't remember seeing this. So it's just like I'm watching it for the first time again. It's a great thing about being like old. It's just everything's new again.
Sure.
Yeah. If you haven't picked up on the way we do this podcast, is like for Hawk the Slayer, that was like Jonathan's movie. Mm-hmm. And like
don't,
I hadn't
don't,
seen
don't
it.
Blame
Robin hadn't
me.
Seen it.
Don't blame me.
Okay, I'm getting to it.
It's
okay.
Your favorite movie. Yeah. Go ahead.
You know? And Red Sonja is the one that I put forward, and my co-hosts, they have not seen it. So I am mm-hmm. super excited to talk about this movie. And these guys don't know what they're getting into.
Nope. Well, I do now.
Well, yeah. Because you've already watched, because you've watched it for the podcast. But
I've now seen two cuts of this movie. So,
yeah.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! I thought we were doing this one cut at a time.
We are, but
are you see? Okay,
it's non-linear.
Yeah, pay no attention. Pay no attention to the production schedule behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's
every
right,
2 weeks we get together.
Yeah,
we broadcast live about
yes.
one cut.
Yeah, so. This here is cut number one. It starts from the pressing play on the recorder and it goes until 15 minutes, 37 seconds. It begins with a young Sonja being empowered by a mystical entity. And it ends with a dying Varna asking Kalidor to find her sister.
Yes.
Oh, yep. So much to talk about.
If people are curious, we are watching the Studio Canal Blu-ray release of this movie. So all of my time codes are going to be based on seeing the Studio Canal logo, the MGM logo, and then getting into the movie proper.
Yeah, because this movie definitely didn't have that Studio Canal logo on it before it originally started. This is like primo. Hey, I'm using Italian. This is like primo.
Hey. Primo Dino.
This is Primo Dino. In 1985, he was in his full power. This is our first Dino De Laurentiis movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, in your mind, you think of him as like schlocky sword and sandal movies, but he didn't do a ton. I mean, he did a lot of Italian movies, but he didn't do a lot of American cinema that was this, other than Conan and Conan the Destroyer, which he is a uncredited producer on. Very odd. He's a money man.
Yeah.
But
I did some research on him, if you want me to get into it, unless you have yours in front of you.
Robin coming back in asking if he has permission to talk about things.
I just don't want to step on your stuff.
You what if I said no? What if I just said no? No, I don't want to hear more about Dino De Laurentiis.
All right, I'll tell you after the podcast.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
I'll be releasing it in our monthly newsletter.
Okay, great.
Sword Noise.
Sword Noise. Every shit. Week. Oh man, we need an email called Sword Noise.
Yeah.
Dino produced over 500 films, starting in Italy in 1949 with the film Bitter Rice. Sounds great. He came to America in the 70s, and his first American film was King Kong. After that, he was anointed with the nickname Dino De Horrendous because he's known for producing very expensive bombs.
I think we would know him if you're a movie person. Serpico is like his first, like, yeah, he did some stuff in the 40s and 50s, but 73, like, that's when he's really kind of becoming this an American producer. American's the wrong word. I know this, a lot of this, you know, he's not an American producer. He just, you know, it's an American movie. So you start seeing more things you've seen before. Whereas, but you know, just 2 years before, he's doing like the Valachi Papers and Boca Chicho, you know, like things that you probably have not seen.
Titles that are fun to say, though.
They're fun to say, but I don't know any of them. You know, and when you look through it, he actually did so many, like Death Wish, Tough Guys, 3 Days of the Condor.
Ugh. Yeah, he was executive producer on like Army of Darkness and like more really modern films like the Hannibal Gordon. And Red Dragon movies. Yeah.
He did all the Red Dragon movies, which is, I didn't even know that. And Halloween 2. He got his hooks into Halloween 2, so he made a little money in that. Now that's what is it, like the 46th anniversary of Halloween?
Yeah.
Or something crazy this week?
48th, I think.
Something crazy. Because I was reading something that they said that it was made for $17,000 or like $170,000 over 17 days, something crazy like that. So that was smart of him to get in on the money on the Halloween 2. I'm sure it made a ton of money.
Some fun facts I gathered about him. Of course, he produced the 76 King Kong with Jessica Lange. Meryl Streep actually auditioned for the role. And Dino, during the audition, said in Italian to whoever he was sitting there with, like, she's too ugly for King Kong, right? But he didn't realize Meryl actually spoke Italian. And she said right back in perfect Italian that she was very sorry she disappointed him before walking out. Another fun quote from him. In 1980, he produced Flash Gordon. And Arnold actually auditioned for the lead role. And his quote is, "You have an accent. I cannot use you for Flash Gordon. Nah, Flash Gordon has no accent. I cannot use you. Nah." According to IMDb, that is his direct quote. So,
okay.
I don't know if I could see Arnold Schwarzenegger throwing a football. I don't know why that one image just does not work in my head.
Flash Gordon, New York Jets.
And the other quote I found from him basically made him my arch enemy as a film buff. He's about talking about movie marketing. He said, "In the trailer, show the audience everything. They always figure there must be more." And I hate that so much. Like, don't show me the entire movie. I get it. Just give me a little taste and we're good. I'm teased. You don't have to just give me a short version of the whole movie.
Here's a fun question. What is your favorite Dino De Laurentiis movie? It's not probably Red Sonja. I'm betting. Or maybe Rick's. It may be Rick's, but what is your favorite? My favorite's Dune. 100% Dune.
Yeah.
Original Dune. He produced that awesome movie that my parents famously made me leave. They made me walk out of Dune during the face picking scene.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, "This is disgusting. We're leaving." And I'm like, "I love it. I want to stay." I was a little kid.
He got into the David Lynch business for sure. Blue Velvet would probably be up there for me. But I'm just looking over the list and I got to say Manhunter sticks out. You know, that was when he first dipped his toes into, he did every Hannibal movie except for Silence of the Lambs. So, but yeah, Manhunter is totally the best one. So.
Hey, you, Rick.
Well, it's okay. It's a bad movie.
They're all bad. They're Dino De Laurentiis movies. We understand. Yeah. Understood.
I market it as it's a bad movie.
Okay, well, I had to call it's a bad movie because it was written by a man from Maine high on cocaine. But Dino De Laurentiis was executive producer on Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah. That's a good movie.
I love how insane that movie. Like, that was the movie where, like, Stephen King did a huge line of coke and said, none of these directors, they can't do it. I gotta do it. And he just made just an insane ball of steel and gasoline and guns. And I'm like, yes, I'm here for it.
Listen, he did U-571. He produced that. That's one of my favorite submarine movies.
Yeah, I remember seeing that one.
With John Bon Jovi. But that is my favorite John Bon Jovi submarine movie.
I was going to recommend, if anybody hasn't seen Maximum Overdrive, if you want to hear Lisa Simpson scream for about 90 minutes, mm-hmm. it is a movie for you.
Or if you want to hear her talk anyway, go listen, watch The Legend of Billie Jean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeardley Smith.
Yeah. Billie Jean. Is Billie Jean or Maximum Overdrive a better movie? This is the question we have.
Billie Jean is probably structurally better because it's not fueled by cocaine.
Cocaine.
But it's Italian for cocaine. Cocaine.
Cocaine.
All right. So in this, we're going to be doing a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger, a lot of Brigitte Nielsen, and a lot of just shitty Italian. Are we going to be doing a shitty Italian accent?
Oh, God. It's going to be great.
It's going to be a lot of It's a Mario. It's going to be a lot of Mario. I apologize now.
Listen, Chris Pratt really opened the door
for white guys to do this.
Generic white guys to do bad Italian accents. It's
completely okay now.
Yep.
He normalized it.
He walked he walked so we could run.
Right. All right. Red Sonja. Based on my research, the character of Red Sonja originated as Red Sonja of Rogatino. She debuted in Robert E. Howard's The Shadow of the Vulture as a 16th century gunslinging hero of Polish-Ukrainian origin fighting the Ottoman Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent. So that existed. And
that's
then
this movie is, right?
Writer Roy Thomas and artist Barry Windsor Smith, they were working for Marvel Comics in 1973, and they were inspired by the Howard character to make their own interpretation of a fiery-haired female warrior and debuted Red Sonja in Conan the Barbarian number 23, the comic. Yeah. So this movie version of Red Sonja is another interpretation of the character. It leans on elements of the Marvel comics, but changes enough details to where the film version kind of fits into the Dino De Laurentiis Conan universe more so than it does old Marvel comic stuff. But spoiler alert, I do lean on Marvel comics continuity for backstory stuff in my notes. So have fun with that.
So it's apocryphal. It's legend.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie has no direct tie-ins to the Conan universe, no matter what any super fan says, mm-hmm. even though they cast half of the cast of Conan.
I mean, yeah. There are fans out there that kind of consider Red Sonja to be the unofficial Conan 3. It's like Conan 3, but all the serial numbers are filed off, so you can't say, that's our Conan. No, it's not. There's no serial numbers. Don't know it's your Conan.
Oh, some people say Kalidor, Conan is traveling under a pseudonym right now.
Right,
sure.
It's Kalidor.
I'm using a pseudonym.
How do you spell that again?
Yeah, they lost the rights to the Conan name, and so they just did a find and replace on the script. They said, what should we rename Conan to? And they're like, Alador?
It's so funny because Robin has a thing behind him right now as his background. And that's one of the promo posters for Red Sonja. Arnold Schwarzenegger is 900 feet tall. And Red Sonja is this tiny little girl. yeah. in front of him. In this movie, and I know for a fact that Arnold is only on the set for, he was supposed to be there a week. He was there 4 weeks. He also boned Brigitte Nielsen in that time. So
he did?
Yeah. Listen, yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is incredibly charming. You cannot deny
Rick
that.
Rick has had sex with Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's what you're coming to tell us. Listen,
I had a gig cleaning houses in Hollywood, and it just, you know, one thing led to another.
Hey, Rick, yeah. I hear you're a soy boy. Come over here. Okay, Arnold. Okay, Calidore. I'm coming over there. Yeah, he's a virile gentleman.
He claims that it's one of his worst movies. Says it's an excellent tool to discipline his children. He says, I tell them if they get on my bad side, they'll be forced to watch Red Sonja 10 times in a row. It must be working because none of my kids have ever given me much trouble.
None of my kids that I know of.
There are so many movies in Arnold Schwarzenegger's, let's see, how many?
Oeuvre?
78 movies he's been in.
Yes.
And there have to be worse movies than Red Sonja that he
I mean, Hercules in New York ain't great.
Yeah.
People seem to like it, but it's not good.
Like, maybe as like the later Terminator movies, discipline them with those.
Maybe they think that this is bad because they should have known better in 1985. Like, he was like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so to him, like, for his career, this was a bad move. And I agree.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying that is for the movie. I'm just saying it's a bad move to like, they want me to be in the movie where I'm basically Conan, but I'm not Conan.
Yeah.
Like, do I get Sonja top billing? How much did he get paid? I'm sure he got paid a ton of money.
Yeah.
Right.
The Red Sonja came in 1985, just after The Terminator in 1984 and just before Commando that same year.
Yeah.
So when you compare Red Sonja to those movies, yeah, it's bad, but
it's like peak Arnold time. But yeah, there's a little speed bump there.
Like there are other bad movies that he did.
And it's not like it's not a sword movie. It's not like Commando is amazing. It's not Scarface. It's dumb. It's 100% Arnold in the 80s movie. Mm-hmm. Commando.
Yeah, quotable.
It's super quotable. Awesome. Good kills.
Alyssa Milano.
She's a child in that.
I was a child then too. So it's okay. Yeah, going back to the source material, by the way, Red Sonja of Rogatino was actually spelled with a Y. So when they decided to bring her character into Marvel Comics, they gave her a J, which always bothered me because.
Did you want to say Red Sonja?
Yeah. My mom's name is Sonja with a Y. So just like I see it, as a kid, I was like, Sonja? The heck is that? But I guess maybe it's a Russian thing or a Ukrainian thing. I have no idea.
Listen, it's the Hyborian Kingdom.
Well, right, we're about to get into it. Let's get into it. Let's talk about this. This is a $6.9 million movie. This is what this movie made at the box office. Yep. Let's talk about it.
$0 Great. Of that $6.9 million was used for a opening crawl narrator.
Nope.
Which is a bit of a shame.
I was right here.
Yeah. Sean Connery was right there in a bathroom in a Spanish villa. He could have read this.
I'm available.
Her name was Red Sonja.
Oh my God.
No, Sean, it's.
Can you imagine his mush Sonja. Mouth?
Yes. Her name was Sonja. She lived in a savage world. It's like, can we not?
A fierce warrior with a flaming red hair.
Thank you, Sean. That's enough, Sean. Thank you.
Well, then they should have gotten James Earl Jones, another Conan.
Oh my God! Yes, oh,
yeah. it's kind of like the beginning of Judge Dredd. It would be awesome. This is how the legend began. I feel like they wanted somebody, and they're like, just put in parentheses, we'll put someone in here, and then the final cut happened. They're like, hey, we never added anybody. And they're like, he's like, just leave it. Leave it the way it is.
Did anybody ever call James to get on this? And he's like, yeah, we tried, but he didn't want to turn into another snake. He's like, It's a voice.
I will not do your stuff, Dino. I did not appreciate becoming a reptile. Or the fact that you gave me bangs.
I don't have a good Lord Fauntleroy.
I had a Prince Valiant haircut. I'm not cool.
It's like me and Courtney Cox in Scream 3. Everybody talks about us on the internet.
So anyway, her name was Red Sonja. She lived in a savage world in an age of violence. A fierce warrior with flaming red hair.
Right off the bat, because they say her name was Red Sonja. So either she loses her name or she's dead.
Listen, this happened a long time ago.
Okay, so they're dead.
Everybody from the Hyperion Age is dead, man. Every Santa Claus whose lap you sat on is dead.
It's Hyborian Age, by the way. There's Hybor. I actually looked up Hyborian Age. That is from the Conan books. It's fictional. And it's so the time period is supposed to take place between the sinking of Atlantis, which I guess is something in Howard's Cole the Conqueror books, which takes place before Conan, to the beginning of recorded ancient history in 3000 BC. So like Howard says, he wanted a like timeless setting, like an age that has been vanished. So if there's any anachronism in here, it's okay because it got wiped out by history. You know, because I guess there's some sort of like cataclysms that happen in the, maybe it happens in this movie. I have no idea. there's lots of storms and hurricanes or something. I have no idea.
Storm and earthquakes, man.
Storm and earthquakes.
It's a hell of a
just
thing.
Just those two.
I love the idea of the Hyborian Age just being this nebulous thing, because it reminds me of Kung Fury, that YouTube short that was made several years back where the guy travels through time and he shows up and there's raptors that shoot lasers. And a Viking woman with a Gatling gun shows up riding a giant wolf, and he's like, "What time is it?" And she's like, "It's the Viking era." And he's like, "That explains the laser raptors."
This is just about as confusing, because it's like Red Sonja. She's great. She's a legend. This is how the legend begins. Cut to Arnold Schwarzenegger on a horse. And his name first.
Well,
in
it doesn't
a movie.
Cut right to Arnold.
Not right to.
Yeah,
we get the back a little bit of the backstory first, but
yeah, it cuts to this is how the legend began. House on fire.
Yes. So this house on fire. They burned this house down.
Oh, absolutely.
You can tell me, Rick, later in the movie, did they show this scene not in flashback, or did they shoot? They seem to have shot a lot of her like backstory, like with production. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like the movie began as one thing and they edited it down. And then at the end, they're like, just put her on some dirt and we'll just show the clips from the stuff we shot earlier. I feel like there's something missing.
Yeah. These.
Do they show it again later?
These shots of the house, like built with the soldiers riding around and all the stonework and stuff like that, it is only used for this opening scene.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah.
So they burned down a real house.
Uh-huh.
I feel like. Or at least, you know, the outside of a real house. Again, did some poor bastard have to wait and just sit there and film until that chimney fell down?
Yeah, just sitting there with the camera. Waiting for the things to topple over. Like, yeah, just let it. We don't need no water. Let this mother effer burn.
Again, we have this seems like be a trend for Sword Boy movies. We have a hero born from the ashes, right? Mm-hmm. We have Sir McCloud exiled from his family. Then we got Dar, his whole village got burned, the Juns. Hawk, father and wife murdered, you know. Mm-hmm. And here we are with Sonja, who got a horrific origin.
She went through this horrible origin, and then you've got this ethereal voice being like, "Sonja, I'm here to tell you all of the horrible things you just experienced for the benefit of the audience.
And by the way, I sound like Glenda the Good Witch. This is a fun fantasy tale.
Oh, by the way, not only did you have an unfortunate backstory, you have the most unfortunate mullet ever." Can we talk about the mullet? Her mullet is amazing. I don't remember. I haven't been on mullet watch. A lot of these movies are gonna have like a mullet. Hers is the best so far. Red Sonja, number one in the books. Someone write it down.
Yeah,
best mullet.
Number one mullet.
It is at least 2 feet long. in the back. You know, she looks like the redheaded kid from Terminator 2, who stops.
Oh my God.
who keeps the cop, who lies to the cop instinctually.
Yes.
And saves the human race.
Absolutely.
But yeah, she gets touched by the sword of yet another ethereal witch slash magician.
Yep.
Is this the same wizard that was healing Voltan's face? Because it seems to have the same production value. At least the end shot of that we see the wizard in Hawk the Slayer. It seems to be the same kind of effect for whatever puff of smoke Glenda is inhabiting here.
All right, so the ethereal voice spitting exposition is never identified in the movie or through dialogue or anything like that. Even in the end credits, she's not identified by anything. But
in the end credits, when she picks up Red Sonja's dead body and carries it out.
Right.
It says,
wait for the sequel.
We're not done with you yet. Yeah. In the comics, Sonja's patron deity is Skaha, a warrior goddess of the Celtic pantheon, known as the Tuatha De Danann.
Just a rager at party. Like, if you want to hear some good jokes, you got to hang out with Skaha. Like, not only is he funny, but he's into the Boss Tones.
Well,
so,
yeah.
See, remember that? I do remember that No Doubt started as kind of a Skaha band and then kind of changed.
Well, yeah. They became more serious.
Well, Skaha, like I said, Robin, Skaha is a warrior goddess. So she's 100% the patron goddess of No Doubt. Absolutely.
Okay, I believe that.
So she was attacked by this queen. What's her name?
Queen Gedrin. Queen shows up at Sonja's family's cottage and she's like, you got a nice face. And she goes for the back-fingered face stroke, and Sonya's like, no, don't like. And so apparently that, in addition to Sonja grabbing Gedrin's mace and scarring her face, Gedrin's like, all right, well, you ruined my face. I need to literally destroy your entire life.
Mm-hmm. And then that's YSM and YSF and YSB. Young Sonja's father, young Sonja's brother, young Sonja's mother, who do not have any credits in this movie.
Nope.
I lines. Think we're overlooking like a huge thing here. I did not notice the mullet because her boobies are hanging out. Like,
you need to focus.
Robin, her eyes are up here.
How many lead like actresses in a movie? Like, the first shot you see them is just like, oh, and her boobs are out. Okay. All right. You know,
it happens.
I am titillated.
Listen, if they had gone with the comics accurate costume, which I feel like a lot of people wanted them to do, because in the comics, she wears a chainmail bikini and that's it. Well, okay. Point of order. It's a scale mail bikini, but I mean, you know what I was getting at.
Did you hit your stickler yourself?
Yes, I did, because it's an important important distinction between scale and chain, but we're not
fuck those guys. So
we're the sword boys. But yeah. The fact that she did not have that super revealing costume, I think a lot of people were really upset about that. So the costume designer was like, all right, upset about
weird stuff.
We'll tear up her costume in the beginning, and
I don't think her boobs are out.
A little meat.
I don't think her boobs are out. They are just covering everything that they need to.
Yeah,
I see nipples.
No, guys, on the right, that is not a nipple. That is a flap of reddish.
Listen, go back into the left. You'll see.
That's not a nipple. I don't think.
No, that is a scrap of fabric. No. It is swinging as she moves. It's like swinging on a connection.
Robin thinks women nipples flap in the wind.
Wait, yeah.
Like, it's casting a shadow. Yeah, that okay, is but, square.
But, okay, but all right. Listen, we're gonna go back and examine the tape. Minute 49 seconds. She is getting up from a laying position, and she gets a definite wardrobe malfunction. I don't know. All right, why am I insisting on this? You know what? I'm just gonna drop all this.
All right, yeah.
Before going, it's made going, into a reel.
Like, the last thing you want is to die on this hill and then I immortalize you on the internet talking about Bridget Nielsen's exposed nipple.
Cut everything.
Is it? Well, that would be our second nipple of these movies because Brenda was our first.
That's right.
So no, Heather was our first.
We saw Heather's nipples?
We saw Heather's nipple.
Oh, I don't remember that. It's been so long. Was that when she was old?
It was right before Sean Connery showed up.
Oh, you're right. You're right. She does. Her shirt does malfunction. Yeah, and Robin showed us that too.
Sean Connery's nipples come out.
Yeah, and then we saw Sean Connery's nipples and the Kurgan's nipples and Candy's nipples.
Milk. It does the body good.
This is the first nipple of the movie. Nipple and mullet on point.
We got to get the nipple boys on. They're the more
you know what? Expert. I do like those guys.
I mean, they contribute a lot of important research, and I don't think I'm properly versed in.
So, like we were saying before, this feels like they shot this at a different time. They shot all that other stuff in the flashback. Looks great. They're practically there. They're in a set. They're on on location, and then later they're like, I don't know who this guy is. Just to throw some sand down on the ground, or will I shoot it that way? Oh, make sure her nipple's out.
Well, I mean, yeah, the guy that we'll probably need to think about is the director, Richard Fleischer, which he is not related to Charles Fleischer, Roger Rabbit, but I like to think in my mind, that we could just have him talk like Roger Rabbit every time we want to, like, please, like,
that's going to clip. There's no way our mics are going to pick that up on Zoom.
Oh, okay.
It's too high and weird. It already clipped. You can't do the please.
Yeah.
It's not gonna...
I just heard you.
Oh, you heard me? You got to get further away from the microphone. You got to be like, please. No, it clipped. It clipped. Come on, Eddie. It keeps clipping on yours.
Yeah. Richard Fleischer, known for 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea in 1954 and Soylent Green in 1973, Fantastic Voyage in 1966. Like, this guy has a lot of really recognizable movies under his belt.
He had a pool the shape of Mickey Mouse's head. Like, and he's just, and crazy enough, he's the son of animator Max Fleischer, who was in charge of a rival to Disney studio. So it's kind of funny that he made all these Disney movies and got rich. This is like,
Max Fleischer,
listen to your music, old man.
Max Fleischer made, is he the one that made Conan on He-Man?
The Superman. I know him mostly for Superman, but maybe
it wasn't him. Maybe it was the Max Fleischer company. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of Richard Fleischer, I was poking around his IMDb page just now, and I discovered that in 1977, he directed a movie called Crossed Swords. The poster for Crossed Swords. See Oliver Reed cross his eyes. See Raquel Welch cross her legs. See Mark Lester cross his fingers. See Ernest Borgnine cross his heart. And see George C. Scott, Rex Harrison, David Hemmings, and Charlton Heston get double-crossed. See the biggest cross-up of them all in Crossed Swords.
That doesn't seem like there's any swords in it at all.
But it's also our next movie.
You know what? I didn't know about it before, but I'm going to make sure it gets on our list.
Put it on the list. All right. So she's given basically superpowers by the witch, the ghost witch. She touches her with a sword on her mullet and gives her at least her mullet the power. I assume the power is all in her mullet.
That's why she keeps it. That's where all the power is stored.
Does she get super strength? Is that what it's like? I give you that strength for your for your sword arm, right? For must have no equal. So
it's 1985, so really the movie has to actually explain how she could be as strong as a man,
right?
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense if yeah, you're right.
There's a bunch of guys in a boardroom somewhere. They're like, how come this broad kid fight with the dudes? And they're like, the mystical voice, it gives her the power with the touching of the sword that they ball it.
Okay.
Eddie, we know that the sword. Wait, did that
you're
all cut out?
Again? You're clipping God, again. You're too close. Get further back,
Eddie.
That's better.
I don't think. I mean, we're we mostly make jokes on this podcast, but I feel weird skipping the fact that, like, it's so weird that in this backstory, our hero is like raped, like over and over and over.
Yeah,
again.
Not great. Not a great start.
Whoever wrote the Wikipedia entry for the plot of this movie, they use some colorful language. They're like, yeah, she gang raped by hundreds of soldiers. And I'm like, all right, first and foremost, dial it back, bro.
Yeah.
Dial it back. You are way too invested in that part of her story.
I thought I was writing on Wikipedia.
But seriously. Yeah, her horseshit is like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's bad. And they just kind of gloss over it really quickly.
Yeah.
And also, I there might be more about this, but I did read there was some criticism about this movie about, like, kind of like gay shaming, like this queen.
Yeah. Gedrin is
Sonya, so
Gedrin is totally
totally
lesbian
gay.
Coded.
Totally gay.
I mean, she wants her, so yeah.
Well, it that makes a lot of these reviews make a lot more sense. I read one review and it's like this movie with this fierce and fiery Red Sonja and the lesbian queen. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So obviously I haven't gotten to the part where I know what that is yet.
Like, it's very much like people making assumptions. It's not in the text. It's subtext.
Okay. Oh, this movie has layers like an onion.
Yeah. I don't see Gedrin as like limiting herself to just being a lesbian. I think she's out to conquer the world. And if you've got something that she wants, she's going to take it.
In the Hyborian age, it's kind of like before Rome. I mean, and the Greeks, it's all very polyamorous. Everybody needs to get on board.
Yeah.
Right. But I think I don't know. Maybe some of the criticism is our hero being like, oh no, never anything but that. I'd rather be raped to death than be your girlfriend, you know, because, you know, gay is bad. You know, I maybe I'm reading too much into it, or maybe the criticism is more of stuff that happens later in the movie. I don't know. I'm just kind of looking for it.
I think the people who are analyzing this movie through that frame, I think the people who are analyzing this movie through that lens have valid criticisms to level at this movie. Thankfully, we're not that type of podcast.
Right, so right.
We can acknowledge it, but we don't need to wade into it.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I
guarantee
the
you there's a podcast. There's a podcast called The Gay Boys. We should find it and we should promote it.
No lab. Yeah. So speaking of boys, we get
we get
this huge backstory, and Sonya is endowed with power, and we see the title as she's, you know, T-posing in the middle of the
forest.
That
is the most Italian beginning of a movie where you just put the name up and you freeze frame the the thing.
It's
I was like, oh, very Italian.
Yeah,
and this
and
font.
It's setting us up for something really epic involving Red Sonya as the heroine of this film. And smash cut to Arnold Schwarzenegger on a horse with his name 40 feet across on a movie screen.
He's top billed.
Mm-hmm.
He is billed before the titular Red Hat titular. Robin, you like that joke because you like boobs?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to talk anymore.
So, they show Arnold Schwarzenegger on his horse. Hey, everybody, goddamn it, I'm back in the first fucking scene. Oh, man, Clompy is.
Is this Clompy?
Yeah.
Clompy is fucking dripped out.
Yeah, because I'm not second tier. I'm a star now. So I get to be Arnold Schwarzenegger's horse this entire movie.
I can't believe it. It said Arnold Schwarzenegger, Clompy, and then... Introducing Brigitte Nielsen.
Yeah. And Ernie Reyes Jr.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get to meet Ernie Reyes Jr. in the second cut.
Yeah.
So there'll be plenty of time
but
for
good,
him later.
A good cast. When you see the cast come up here, you're actually great like, cast. Oh, I know that guy. I know that guy.
Like Ronald Lacey, you all remember him from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Smith, Pluto, and Pluto from himself. Dune.
Yeah,
from the Beast Raban,
and Ernie Reyes Jr. of course from The Last Dragon, one of the best movies ever made.
Yep, Sandahl Bergman. Yep. So if you're watching this and confused and have seen Conan, you're gonna be like, oh, cool.
Be like, wait a second, I thought Valeria was dead by this time. And it's like, yes, she is, which is why Sandahl Bergman is playing someone else.
She's playing the lesbian queen you didn't know about, her sister. Sister.
Now, from what I heard, Sandel Bergman was originally offered the role of Red Sonja, but she turned it down.
I she's think blonde.
In order to play Queen Gedrin. Like, she wanted a more interesting role. And
she wanted more headpieces.
I want to be the baddie.
I think Brigitte Nielsen was modeling around this time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And looking to expand into acting.
Well, she was. That's literally how Dino found her on the cover of a magazine. It's one of those stories of just like, who's of this? I gotta get her.
So, shall we play the game? How old is our main star? How old is Brigitte Nielsen when she is starring in this movie?
Oh, I mean, like, she's what, 19?
I mean, she's probably 21, but she's tall. She's really tall. She didn't look older. I guess that's not the. She looks.
That's 21. The second game. How tall is she?
21.
She is 22.
Ah, okay. Still so close.
Okay.
How tall is Red Sonja?
6 feet tall.
I'm gonna
say
that's
exactly right.
Oh, okay. 6 feet. Exactly. Yeah. 6 feet, huh?
Yep.
She's nice. My height, which isn't tall. Queen. Really?
Right.
Well,
but I mean, around Arnold Schwarzenegger and the other people that were at this time being made into the big guys. That's she's I remember because remember in Rocky 4, she's portrayed as a monster woman, basically.
Yeah. It's so crazy that this movie and Rocky 4 are like made pretty much in the same year.
Yeah.
And I have some background on her. She began modeling at 16.
Okay.
She prefers to be called Jeet. Or Git. I don't know how you pronounce it, but without Ethan. The B-R-I at the beginning of her name. She doesn't like to be called Bri, I suppose, but Jeet, maybe. She was married and had a son at the time she was cast. And when she got the role of Red Sonja, she was just like, and I'm out. And apparently while she was making Sonja, she co-starred in Rocky IV and started an affair with Sly Stallone.
So she had an affair.
Got married to him.
So she boned down, she boned Arnold Schwarzenegger, mm-hmm. and then had a relationship with Stallone, and then married Stallone.
Yep.
Interesting. And then
divorced him like 2 years later, and she's on her fifth marriage. But they've been together since like 2006. So I'm assuming.
But then she married Bruce Willis, and so she got the entire Planet Hollywood trifecta.
As you do, you got to collect them all.
Yeah.
Her current marriage, at the time of this recording, she got into a year after her relationship with Flava Flav, which is another claim to fame.
I remember that.
When she was on The Surreal Life with Flava Flav,
you're
she
right.
had some real chemistry with him, and they ended up like dating together.
That's so
which is just
odd.
The craziest combination, but
yeah,
the heart wants what the heart wants, everybody. Yeah,
exactly. And as Flavor Flav would say, yeah!
yeah!
Did I clip? Sorry.
No, you didn't clip that time.
Sometimes you walk into the ice cream shop and you just want to get a taste of every flavor.
Mm-hmm.
the last thing I have about her is in the 80s, she actually modeled for Marvel as She-Hulk and nearly starred as She-Hulk in 1991. Because of Sonja and the whole She-Hulk thing, whenever she's written about, she's usually called Amazonian, even though she's 6 foot. I mean, I guess it's tall, but it's not like, oh my God, she's like a basketball player. It's, seems like a little more than average height. She looks a lot like, I think the Robin Wright in Wonder Woman was based a lot on Red Sonja's look.
You know, she has a mullet, doesn't she? Doesn't that character.
Or at least it's kind of pinned feathered. Back. Or,
yeah.
So whenever I see her in this movie, I'm kind of taken back to Wonder Woman, strangely.
It's funny because we can bag on the acting in this movie. We can bag on the direction of this movie and the costumes. But the music is, it's not amazing. It's fine. But the person who did the music, Ennio Morricone,
Morricone. Yeah.
Yeah. He legend.
He's famous beyond famous for the amount of movies he's done and soundtracks you've heard. The Thing, The Untouchables, Kill Bill, Once Upon a Time in the West, A Few Dollars More. I'm trying to think. The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, Cinema Paradiso, The Mission.
It kind of feels like Ennio Morricone kind of phoned this one over on a weekend. Yeah.
Django Unchained, which is a great soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I just feel like this one was, this one felt like, hey, I'm just going to be in my bathroom and I'll compose this. No problem. Just really? Give me a few minutes.
I'm impressed by the soundtrack. There's sometimes in the soundtrack where I'm like, okay, well, this seems a little epic for a guy just riding on a horse. But hey, I mean, I just came from the disco of Hawk. So this is just literally music to my ears.
Hey, Rick, here's a editing project. Can you put this scene to the music from Hawk the Slayer?
Oh, absolutely.
And please, reverse it and put Hawk the Slayer to the Red Sonja music.
That's definitely something I'm going to make and put on the Facebook page.
I feel like they would both work, like they're interchangeable because nothing's really happening here. At least he's though riding the horse quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Hawk, he's just kind of like very slowly walking the horse.
Yeah. But Arnold is or Calidor, I should say.
Yeah.
He's going to introduce himself later, but he's just kind of riding somewhere and then he reaches a rope bridge that is out and he's like, oh well, I guess I gotta go back the way I came. And
that's so weird.
we kind of figure out where he's going as the director credit flashes up on screen in front of this large circular, it's not a pyramid because it's circular, it's a cone.
It's a cone. Yeah,
it's one of the cones of Dunshire.
It's Cone the Destroyer.
Yes,
it's all about the cones. Yeah, it's right. Weird.
We just made Conan the Destroyer. What should the shape of the temple be? I don't know. A cone?
How about the giant breast? Just a one big breast.
I saw Madonna on the MTV. She inspired me.
It's funny that Robin's imitation of Dino is so close to his own to his own impression of Robin. Just one a boob.
I don't say as many vowels at the end of my words, but it's weird. It's like God, the production design is crazy in this because it's not just a simple cone. It's like a bunch of people sitting cross-legged holding up a cone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I don't get it. Is it shooting something into the sky or?
I'm just happy to see set work again.
Yeah.
Proper. Insano 1980s set work. We have a matte painting of this weird cone, Cone the Destroyer, and then we go in and you see for the first time these costumes that are just—I mean, they're breathtaking. And I was just like, and right when we find out later that's Red Sonja's sister, the girl with the red hair. It looks like Madeline Kahn, but I like that. I love that you're just like, I have no idea what's going on, but I'm in it already. I'm already in this movie.
I love this overhead shot of all the sword maidens and the priestesses with the swords. And they're doing one of those old Hollywood, like choreographed movement type of things.
Yeah. So many cone heads. They're all wearing cone heads. Have you noticed? They all have cones on their heads. What is up with this?
Look at these costumes. Okay. This is Danila Donati. He did the costumes for Romeo and Juliet, Caligula, and Flash Gordon. And I'm telling you, these costumes are very Gordon-esque.
No, very Gordon. Gordon
is alive in this movie.
Okay. He is.
I think maybe they recycled, but I can't prove it. But boy, I see some of this, these armor, these breastplates, these freaking helmets are crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm immediately taken back to like the football soldiers.
Yeah.
You know,
the scene with all the people in the weird colors. Man. Yeah, they all have on weird colors. Really well done composite shot of the soldiers coming up to the cone. That little tiny, you can tell that little tiny avenue is the only part of the movie that's real. And the rest of the whole thing around it is just a big matte painting. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Has some nerd translated the hieroglyphs behind priestesses?
I think there's one for handicapped parking
and sword girls.
Yeah.
Well, this is our favorite. These are our compatriots. The Sword Girls are, I guess, a sect of women that help write. Do they have a name? Like, are they someone called them Amazons? Like, they're kind of tall too. Are they supposed to be Amazons? Like the actual Amazons?
I think they're just a sect of women dedicated to this temple, and this temple happens to be where the Talisman of Creation is.
Okay. Let's talk about
I really appreciate the high priestess of this temple, because she's like, hey, gods, you've given us a literal nuclear bomb. This isn't good. We're going to put it away safe where no one can mess with it.
Not cool. We're kind of assholes. We're going to screw with it.
I don't understand why it's in their hands to begin with. I don't understand they're stealing it away.
The gods just do this. You know,
why does Hawk's dad have the mind sword?
Like, seriously, why do birds suddenly appear every time you're near? Like, seriously,
because I'm Robin.
But Kendra, the high priest, very ordinary name for high priest. Kendra.
She also is one of the band members of Gem and the Holograms in her off time. Kendra.
But she approaches Varna, the redhead, and she says, where is the Lord of Hyrcania? That, as we have not yet connected yet, but will connect later on the movie, Arnold as Kalidor is the Lord of Hyrcania, and it is his job to be a sort of custodian alongside these priestesses and sword maidens to protect the talisman. And Kendra's like, ugh, he's not here. We got to get started.
Sorry I was late. The bridge was out.
Which, honestly, Gedrin totally destroyed that bridge, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
So he's on his way back from where?
It's like I'm late. I have to go for the sealing away ceremony.
We didn't put an actual date on it, and there's no calendar. There's no Hyborian calendar yet. So trying to find a place is like,
and by the way, my name is not Calendar. It is Calidor.
So I tried to get there, like they said, on Monday. I don't know what day it is.
I am not a calendar.
They said, be here next Crom's Day. And I'm like, what?
So Kendra's like, hey, you know what? We're going to seal it away. Sorry, gods. Mm-hmm. Forgive us for sealing this away.
Sorry.
And unbeknownst to these sword maidens and priestesses, Queen Gedrin is outside with an army, and she sends Tote up on the side of the... Okay, his name isn't Tote in this movie. It's Eichel. But Tote climbs up on the side, and he pulls out this a throwing star.
Well, first of all, before you say that, his throwing star, Queen Gedrin is dressed like a pineapple. I'd like to talk about that for 4 seconds. She's dressed like a pineapple. I love it. We will throw this up in the group. We have to have shots of this stuff. I mean, it's impossible to, and you're right, Robin, the Tote's outfit is 100% the exact same color palette of what do you mean Flash Gordon is alive? That woman, her outfit is the exact outfit that she wore. I feel like with the weird, it's like the opposite of it's got to have a name. Instead of having a mohawk, it's the opposite. It's the front way. It's the rotated mohawk where the mohawk goes, you know, like a sun. Oh, it's right. So good. All right. So Queen Pineapple's here. Yep. Go on with our first. It's our first sword other than the swords the maidens have, the sword ladies have.
So, yeah, he has it. And he pulls out a throwing star, and it is very shiny. And he throws it down into the ceremony, and it hits the priestess square in the chest because it is on a fishing line. You can see the fishing line very clearly in the movie because it goes right across Varna's face.
Well, luckily, he hit her right in the part that's like the thickest part of her armor.
Right.
Yeah, so she's fine.
Wait. It's the part that should hurt her the least.
She's falling over.
She's falling over because she's one of those. She's so dramatic, guys. She's such a, what's her name? Karen?
Kendra.
She might as well be Karen.
Princess Karen. She's like, it hurts so much.
See, what we don't know.
My leg fell asleep. I can't stand.
that's actually Kendra's weak spot. Like she's a video game boss, and you've got to hit her there, or she won't take damage.
That's the button that turns her off.
As she's falling down, it's the window shut off noise.
I invested in glass jaw armor.
Yeah, so yeah. They ride horses in. There's lots of sword play.
Yeah, so this is our first like absolute melee.
Yeah.
In the Hyborian Age, you can't really like kick in a door without expecting to meet some resistance. And these sword maidens and priestesses, everyone is armed to the absolute teeth. And I was watching this fight, and the sword maidens are actually kicking a ton of ass.
Mm-hmm.
Varna specifically.
Varna should be the star of this movie.
Yeah.
I am such a crush on Varna right now.
Like, seriously.
And her wig.
They are hacking and slashing these fools left and right. Gendryn soldiers are falling like, you know, wheat before the scythe type of thing. And the sword maidens are actually able to force these guys back outside. And the only reason they lose is because soldiers drop in on ropes and they get caught in a pincer attack. They're overwhelmed with numbers, and that's the main reason they lose.
Yeah, I would say you're giving some of the sword fighting a little bit too much credit. I think the close-ups are great. When we see Varna fighting, oh my God, I'm just like, yeah, kick ass, you know? But a lot of it, we need a term for sword fighting that where they're just kind of like hitting swords together for funsies. Like, this is what kids, if they have cardboard tubes left over from Christmas tree or Christmas present wrapping. Okay, we just got to click, clink, yeah. Clink, clink, back and forth. One side, this side.
It's funny you say clink, because I was thinking we just call it clanging. Just when you just like
clanging.
First thing you do is just walk up to somebody like clang, 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 clang.
Yeah. Like it's not even choreographed. It's
yeah.
Like,
Varna okay, so got go training.
Left, right.
Left, Varna right. Got sword training. Like yeah. She and her stunt double got sword training, and everybody else is like, just clang. Just please.
When they all come in, like we literally see a Gendryn soldier just walk by a priestess who's fighting another soldier without like kind of like just stabbing her in the back. You're like, okay, yeah. That you're fighting that person. So I want to go fight somebody else because I need to get in the shot.
And then Queen Gendryn rides in on a
such
horse.
Such a boss move.
Oh yeah. Like
you really gotta hand it to Sandel Bergman. She is owning this role, and I think calling it a pineapple crown is probably the best way to describe it. I'm not the biggest fan of
if your pineapple was both a lesbian and had a face, this is what it would look like. This is what it would look like. I really wish that Priestess Janice down the ground was just like, oh, now the place smells like horse poop. Because the horse is like taken away and you can hear it clomping away. You know that there was definitely some like, ah, shit, this is way too loud. Mm-hmm. And then her death soldiers come in. Holy crap. I thought the headgear had been great before. Man. Is this a helmet on top of a helmet on top of a helmet? It's three helmets high.
Yep. You got the weird under helmet and you've got the wide over helmet and then the skull on top of that with the horns sticking out.
Man, and then they got this green glowing glob.
Yeah, like I said, it's a uranium core. Like,
it's the mind stone. It's the mind stone in some sort of. It's the same effect as a mind stone. It's just like we don't hear the sound though. I miss the sound of the mind stone.
Yeah, we need the mystical noise in this movie. And
she has Queen Pineapple has him touch a man touch the spiky circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the shot where he touches the talisman, he's got this weird glowing green overlay effect that travels up his arm and to the top of his head. And it's showing like a glowing skeleton underneath his skin.
Yeah.
And then he just snaps out of existence.
She must have done her research because she's the queen. She wants this power. But then she's just going to get this rando guy to touch it. And what if all of a sudden the talisman was just like, and now he's the most powerful person in the universe. And the queen's just like, oh, crap.
She's done a little bit of research and she wants to test a theory. You know,
why does she keep making her workers do it and not the women, the are there any sword women left? I guess no.
Oh, yeah, there are still surviving sword women.
Mm-hmm.
But so
they sent this other woman over who she seems like I would know her. Like she seems like she would have talking lines in this movie. Is she going to talk later?
She is.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Gedrin's handmaid. This is the young woman who got the job that Sonya turned down.
Oh, job in quotes. Gotcha. Right.
The
gotcha.
The position, so to speak.
Goodness.
But yeah, Gedrin sees one of her men destroyed and she's like, "You handmaiden, touch the thing." And the handmaiden gets like wide eyes. She's like, "I don't want to touch that thing."
Yeah.
Oh, and of course they have a cone top to put on top of it. Mm-hmm. Of course.
I love how they came prepared.
Oh, I assume that was here.
Oh, did you? I didn't even consider that.
I don't assume they brought a cone. All right. All right. Let me get, here's my list. Horses, check. Swords, check. Cone? Mm. Do we have the cone? No, the cone is there.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Everything in that place is a cone. What's up with I don't understand the place they were going to put it. So this thing reacts to light.
Yep.
So it being in the light is bad. So they were going to put it. They were going to put. Oh God! And they're just throwing the women into the hole. Is how deep is the hole? Because the women are alive.
Yep. Yeah.
But not like they're not dead, and that's the opposite of alive. They are not dead, but hurt.
Yeah, it's like definitely it's a Will Ferrell in the Austin Powers movie situation where it's like, I'm still alive. They've fallen like what, 10, 15 feet maybe?
Yeah.
And I mean,
they do go head first.
A pile.
Yeah. Well, the first ones are fucked up. Like the first ones are messed up and the rest are like, oh, well, I fell on Brenda and Jenny. So it's actually not so bad.
Yeah. And then, of course, they're sealed away in eternal darkness. And the key to open the plinth is in there with them. So they are just in a bad way.
So say RSVP to the to the it's a sword girls is canceled.
Yep indeed.
Okay.
And so did we skip past the important part that only a woman can touch this? What kind of woke talisman is this?
I mean, we're so tired of these movies.
Yeah, it's so woke.
It's the talisman of creation. Like, of course, women are the only one who can touch it because it's a metaphor or a, you know, allegory.
It's a metaphor. Like Calidor is a metaphor.
What is
my name
metaphor?
Is not metaphor. It is Calidor or calendar.
I don't know what that is. Yeah. And the other thing is just like this can make worlds or shatter them by storm and earthquake.
And that's an important detail because they are going to repeat it several times over the course of this movie.
And it's just like, you can't like, I can't destroy the world any other way. I mean, how powerful is this thing? You know, I can't just like set the world on fire or.
Let's say like, it has the power to create one large explosion. And level a city.
And Varna since there's no rope bridge, she went to the other. She's basically at a Cub Scout camp.
Yeah.
She's going over to the zip line.
The kick-ass zip line.
Sweet zip line.
Is this our first zip line?
I don't think we've ever had a zip line like this in a movie we've watched before.
So that's awesome. Welcome, first zip line. I feel like that's a kind of a swashbuckly sword and adventure kind of trope. So,
yep.
Yeah, she's about halfway down, and unfortunately, five of the thuggy show up, and start shooting her with.
Watch out for the alligators down at the bottom.
Yeah,
nailed right in the back, and thankfully she has like her hand wrapped up in such a way that she doesn't instantly fall off the rope.
That's some core strength right there.
Yeah,
and Varna
is the star of this movie, as far as I'm concerned.
She. Yeah, well, she's going to be in the movie the whole time, for sure.
And strangely, it looks like the arrow like hits her in the back and then falls out, because when Calidor catches her on the other side, she doesn't have an arrow in her.
No,
and then he puts her down and then
over on the side now.
It's there
because he pulls it out.
What the heck? You guys see arrows, but you don't see nipples? Like,
well, we're not looking for nipples. We're looking for arrows.
What are the nipples in the shot?
And then he grabs her off of the line, takes her over, pulls out the arrow unceremoniously, and then my Calidor sense starts tingling.
That's right. Kalidor is attacked by seven of Gedrin's soldiers.
Where did
who
they
made
from?
It across the... They all just zipped together? Maybe they like... They scooted down.
They
and
zipped
then
like as one form yeah. of one Whee! Soldier. And they
it was
all...
like one guy holding on for dear life and everybody else is hanging off of him.
Oh, you're so heavy, Carl.
But
great this... acting when Kalidor senses the soldiers behind him, though. That look of like,
huh? Yeah, it's really good. This great is, acting. And this is where I'm sure there's going to be a sword breakdown. Swift fight breakdown, but I want to, before you say it, I love the physicality of him going into basically Conan mode. That is
yeah.
like his, him using a sword is Conan.
Yeah.
It's the exact same moves, which yeah. I love.
So as Gedrin's soldier sneaks up behind him, his eyes go wide. He looks over to the side, grabs his sword. And as he stands up, we get our first sword fight breakdown.
It's a sword fight breakdown.
Drawing his sword as he rises to his feet, Kalidor parries an overhead swing from a soldier. Parries an overhead swing from soldier number one, following up with a diagonal slash across soldier one's midsection. That is his signature move.
Yes.
Throughout this fight, it is how he dispatches like four or five of these seven guys.
Because once you go bowels, you'll never. I don't know what.
Get towels.
Yeah.
By the way, did you notice my giant codpiece?
You're looking now, though.
Yes. It's a sword dick breakdown.
Yeah, I don't know how Gedrin trains her soldiers, but I have a suspicion that it's hold your sword up above your head and rush your enemy completely exposed to their attacks.
Yeah, one by one.
Yep, one at a time, sword raised, so that he can parry high, slash low, and completely decimate you. One of the guys... who attacks with his sword up. He has his sword so far back behind his head that it's actually parallel with his spine. It's that far back. And Kalidor doesn't even bother parrying the attack. He just impales the guy on his sword.
You idiot.
Hey, that sounds like Arnold
Schwarzenegger. You deserve that.
Yeah. And I think soldier number seven. Soldier number seven has the most spectacular death out of all of them, because Arnold doesn't even bother parrying. He just wide-eyed horizontal swing, and then the soldier's head flies up into the air in a nice tumbling arc.
And then he falls to his knees and lightning strikes him.
I have a point.
Kalidor is given the prize.
I have a point of sword boy's etiquette that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Puts his sword away. Sloppy with blood.
Gotta clean the blood off the sword.
I wish he'd picked up the head and kind of used the head as like a to kind of like the hair to kind of clean the sword. Like,
well, his outfit was white when I got it, but I just don't care. I just love to be coated in my enemy's blood.
You're Arnold
Schwarzenegger. I sounded like a Transylvanian.
You're Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So bad. It's blood.
It's interesting. It's an interesting take. I would not have expected that.
Everything I wear is velvet, in case you're wondering. Blood does not come out of velvet at all.
Oh, what an amazing outfit, though. Honestly, looking at him, I'm like, he is some sort of rich prince that's just riding around. I don't see him as like, I mean, his muscles and sword say warrior, but boy, he is shining and he's clean.
Yep. And you're in your best, in the best girl, Varna. She is, she's dying. She's like, the talisman's been stolen. Got to find my sister. Move exposition.
Yeah. Now we don't, it's not said, but it's very clear to me that Varna recognizes Kalidor,
right?
Because she was the one that was told, hey, keep an eye out for the Lord of Hyrcania. So she doesn't come right out and say, oh, hey, Lord of Hyrcania, good thing you're here, because the talisman's gone. It's like, listen, she does not have a lot of time. She's got to get the important things out. Talisman stolen, got to destroy it. Get my sister.
I don't understand why you were late. Don't you have a calendar? Isn't that your name? No, it's Kalidor. God damn it.
Don't ever call me Conan. Listen to them.
Is your name a play on words?
Of the night.
Is your name a play on words? No, it's not a metaphor. It's Kalidor.
So Kalidor is going to, I guess, be a part of this movie by helping the sister. And we'll find out next cut what all this is about. Maybe. Will anything be explained?
Oh, so much will be explained, because next time, Sonya completes her training under the Grand Swordmaster and receives her signature sword. Kalidor arrives and brings her to a dying Varna, who tasks Sonya with saving the world. After burning Varna's body, Sonya rides towards the kingdom of Havelock, where she finds its crown prince in peril following Queen Gedrun's destructive passing. Who knows what waits our hero as she rides towards her destiny?
Well, that description sounds great. I hope the cut lives up to it.
Oh, it will.
All right.
So, have we done plugs for our stuff anytime recently? I feel like we've kind of gotten out of habit.
Yeah, that's
telling people where they can find more stuff.
That's the problem, was we don't not doing enough plugs.
Yeah. So, listeners, if you want to get more Sword Boys content in between our episodes, you can follow us on Facebook. Our group is swordboys.biz/group on Facebook.
All spelled out.
Yep. Instagram and TikTok and Twitter are all at Sword Boys. I think it's all at Sword Boys. I maintain.
Maybe this is why we don't do promos, because you don't know the promos.
Right. But yeah, we do little snippets of the episodes in between every release.
Go to swordboys.biz and you can find all of our socials.
Exactly. Until next time.
Clink clang.
Clink clang.
Clang clang. See, that's why it's a clang clang. The clang is hitting the not good fighting. It's clang clang.
It's cling clang. I don't know.
Clang.
Clang clang.
Maybe we need to figure out when we're going to record. My name is Calendar, and I'm here to help you figure out what day you're going to record the next episode on.
Oh, thank God he's here. We had a terrible zipline accident.
Oh, no! I just give up trying to find the rest.